Hi, this is Jeff Kober, and we welcome you to this week's Disney Insights. Well, this last previous week was a business program that I delivered, and it took me to Kansas City, where Walt moved to around age 10, and where he returned to after serving in the Red Cross during World War I. If Disneyland's Main Street USA symbolizes Marceline, Missouri, then Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom Main Street should symbolize Kansas City. We'll talk about all the sights I saw and the impressions I had. It is a story of family struggles, of bankruptcy, and dreams of a new life. Walt and Roy had a unique experience in Kansas City that prepared them for what lay ahead in California. We'll share all of it, and then we'll liken it to our own lives and our life experiences. Join us for Kansas City, beginning and failures for Walt and Roy Disney. You can also check out DisneyInsights.com where, well, frankly, we have some important links, photos, and other things that kind of help you understand the experience Walt and Roy had in those days of growing up in Kansas City. So please check that out. Make sure that while you're at DisneyInsights.com, you subscribe to this podcast. And also make sure that as you visit your own podcast host, whether that's iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Listen Notes, whatever, make sure you subscribe to that podcast as well. And that, and if you have a chance, please provide a rating, review, or referral to others to let them know about, well, the littlest podcast that ever could. We really want you to be a part of this. Be sure to check out our Facebook page, Disney Insights, and remember that our YouTube page of the same name offers you scores, if not hundreds, of videos for you to check out of all things Disney. Well, let's talk about finding Walt in Kansas City. There really are two distinct chapters in Walt's life when it comes to Kansas City. One is related to the family's move when Elias struggled to maintain the farm due to poor health. His young childhood years in Marceline may have been idyllic for Walt, but the family struggled so badly during this time that two of his brothers, Herbert and Raymond, left home frustrated of the constant work and deprivations. Walt was around 10 at the time of this move to Kansas City in 1911. Remember, born in Chicago, moved to Marceline, and now in 1911, moved to Kansas City. And as the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Oklahoma shared the song Everything Was Up to Date in Kansas City, well, you get a pretty good sense of it with lyrics like this. Everything's up to date in Kansas City. They've gone about as far as they can go. They went and built a skyscraper 7 stories high, about as high as a building ought to grow. Everything's like a dream in Kansas City. It's better than a magic lantern show. You could turn the radiator on whenever you want some heat. With every kind of comfort, every house is all complete. You can walk to privies in the rain and never ever wet your feet. They've gone about as far as they can go. They've gone about as far as they can go. That was a reference to a period set in the play and the film, subsequent film, around 5 years prior to the time Walt arrived in Kansas City. But it's a song that plays on Main Street USA. Actually, literally plays. It's one of the songs that plays on Main Street USA as you walk down the street at the Magic Kingdom. In fact, you may recall that a couple of years ago, before all the craziness of COVID, there was a theater planned just off of Main Street at Magic Kingdom. That project, well, ultimately was canceled, but the theater's architectural cues were to be taken from the Willis Wood Theater, which was a palace, cinema palace in and of itself in Kansas City. In short, if you love Main Street USA at Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World, then know that the essence of this land finds its roots in Kansas City. One place I checked out while in Kansas City was Walt's home, well, the family's home, beginning in 1914. This house was where Disney explored his interest in cartooning. Walt set up a makeshift art studio in the garage, where he used a borrowed motion picture camera to experiment with different animation techniques, creating what became ultimately the first Laugh-O-Gram shorts and the start of his ultimate success. Various members of the Disney family occupied the residence until November 1921, when Walt's father sold the house. Today it remains a private residence and is not open to the public. The house and garage were added to the National Register of Historic Places back in 1977. But the house is still there, went by it, took not a great photo, but you capture the essence of the experiences. You look at the photo that's listed on Disney Insights, and the essence is these were humble times. These were humble experiences for a family who struggled in Marceline and then struggled further to make it work in Kansas City. Driving around those neighborhoods where the house was, neighborhoods of that era, allowed me to consider how Walt would rise daily at 3:30 a.m. to deliver newspapers on his father's paper route. To make ends meet, the family delivered the morning newspaper, the Kansas City Times, to some 700 customers, and the Kansas City Star to more than 600. Between this was school for Walt. Both he and Roy actually delivered the papers, and they were reluctant to actually give their father Elias this route to actually manage, because Elias was getting older at that time. They usually gave it to younger people. But because of the boys, he was able to actually manage this route. Now, remember, not all was arduous during this time. He also discovers and falls in love with vaudeville and movies. When the circus came to town, Walt rallied a bunch of kids, dressed them up, and pulled their own little wagons behind the circus parade as it headed to the showgrounds. In another situation, Walt did his very best Charlie Chaplin imitation during an amateur night in town. Curiously, as I was driving around that day, my own brother reached out to me, texted me. He had no idea I was traveling at the time, but he texted me to inform me that we were actually related to Walt Disney. How ironic that he would reach out to me at that time. Apparently, he is my ninth cousin, three times removed. I have no idea what that all means. But there actually is an app for doing this, for actually checking how you actually may be related to Walt Disney. And if you go to, go to DisneyInsights.com, you can see the link for this app. Roy Disney was part of the scene there as well. Their father did not pay them a salary, but rather gave Roy $3 a week and Walt 50 cents a week as an allowance. Both were frustrated, but it was Roy who vocally protested the pay, and it set him at naught with his father at times. Still, Roy paid for tickets to take Walt and their sister Ruth to the movies, and in time he sought employment as a teller with the National Bank of Kansas City. Now, that actually still exists. It's now the downtown library. And honestly, when you look at it, it looks a lot like the bank in Mary Poppins. Well, there, Roy became friends with another teller, Mitch Francis, who would ultimately introduce Roy to his sister, Edna. After 5 years of steady companionship, they decided they would get married. They decided this in 1917. However, World War I came into view, and Roy headed into the Navy, and it would be some 8 years before they ultimately were married. Walt and Roy's family will eventually move back to Chicago, Walt's birthplace, and they would do this in 1917, where he would, where Elias would invest in a jelly, factory, as well as a soft drink factory. Walt stayed around in Kansas City to finish his last year at Benton School before heading to Chicago. Then in 1918, Walt would leave to become an ambulance driver with the Red Cross, but at the end of World War I. In 1919, Walt returns back to the United States, moves to Kansas City, and this is where part two. begins. He gets a job at what's his Pessman Rubin commercial arts studio for about $50 a month. And I believe it was either either Roy or Mitch who knew somebody at the bank who knew somebody who knew that they were looking for artists at Pessman Rubin. He went to work for them for $50 a month. A year later, Walt will meet up with of iWorks, who informs the iWorks Disney commercial artists. The company fails after 1 month. Walt and iWorks get jobs at the Kansas City Slide Company, later known as the KC Film Ad Company. And there is where he discovers animation. While keeping his day job, Walt creates Newman Laugh-O-Grams, which produces advertising and topical shorts and story cartoons. Then in 1922, Walt incorporates Laugh-O-Grams Films with $15,000 from backers. And a year later, Laugh-O-Gram will actually go bankrupt. The Laugh-O-Gram Studios are located at 1127 East 31st Street in Kansas City. It's a fairly straight shot from their original home. I think it was about 2-3 miles away. The building was an equivalent of a turn-of-the-century strip mall kind of facility. It wasn't fancy, but it wasn't made of sticks either. It was a brick home, brick office, and there is actually a mural outside the building reminding you of the neighborhood where it originally happened. You can't go in the building. It hasn't been... I think there are people trying to restore it, but it's not quite there yet. But you can actually go past this original studio. Beyond the studio, just a block or so away, is the Isis Theater. The theater is, well, it's no longer there. It suffered multiple fires, and then ultimately it was simply razed. But it was an amazing theater, and a mural is there in that lot commemorating the place in the location it was at. There is actually, you could see, and again, you see photos of this on my site. There's a picture of a painting of Walt and Mickey and some other individuals connected with the community. The Isis Theater was kind of unique back then because it was actually in the suburbs as opposed to downtown Kansas City, where you typically would go to find a nice theater, or any theater for that matter. Theaters usually were downtown during those periods. It was in these times, working with the Isis Theater, that Walt had become familiar with Carl Stalling, who was an organist for the Isis Theater. Remember, this is the time of silence, silent films, and so there would be an organist that would play the music and so forth as you watched whatever movie was on the screen. And again, just around the corner from his studio during the early 1920s, he came to know Carl because one of Walt's first jobs was as an illustrator of commercial slides used in theater. After leaving for California, Walt would return to Kansas City periodically, particularly between trips made on the train between Los Angeles and New York. Carl loaned Walt money at one time and even helped Walt figure out the musical score for some of the early Mickey Mouse shorts. He then even went to New York to help record them, and ultimately Carl followed Walt out to California, where he became the studio's first music director. I think this is fascinating because I was having a conversation the other day about my book, Disney, A Century of Powerful Disney Insights. And I asked this friend of mine what she thought of the book and so forth. And she liked the book. She loved the book. I said, well, I'm doing volume two. Is there anything that you wish you'd like to see or you'd like to see played out in volume two? And she goes, well, I really feel like that the music of Disney is America's playbook. And I thought, that's really true. And here it was. It began with, well, frankly, with Carl Stalling being the first music director of the very early days when Walt was trying to figure out the early Mickey Mouse shorts. I should also mention that as the studio's first director, he even later recommended to Walt doing a short based on Grieg's March of the Dwarfs. Only the tune was used as an eventual score, not for Dwarves, but to Skeleton Dance, which was ultimately the first silly symphony that Walt would create. And then a few years later, Carl eventually went on, he and Ub Iwerks kind of went on to other jobs. In Carl's case, he went on to be a composer for cartoons over at Warner Brothers. There are a few other sites to see in Kansas City. They include Iwerks Disney Commercial Artists. Initially, this was run out of a bathroom in the Mutual Building. It was a short-lived art studio where Walt had his first private venture. There, he and Ub Iwerks started Iwerks Disney Commercial Artists in January of 1920 using some savings coming out of Walt's Red Cross experience in France. Their early success ultimately led them to move to another location. There is also a possibility of seeing the Kansas City Slide Company. This is where Walt worked as a cartoon artist, making those slides that I mentioned earlier that usually would appear as a preface to a movie. The facility once housing this was preserved and is now an academy for learning. So there are a couple other places, and where these while there are original facilities that are still not there, there are still other locations that were key or pivotal to Walt and Roy's experience there in Kansas City. I have a link on Disney Insights for a site where you could see a good listing of these. But what is not noted in that listing is the ribbon that ties all of this together with Kansas City, and that is the railroad. Kansas City was truly the hub, the railway hub of America, with 12 railway lines entering the city around the time of Walt. Kansas City became a chief railroad junction for the central mid-states. In fact, you would leave on there, I think it was Santa Fe, I believe, and ultimately it was there going directly out to California, where you would go past the Promontory Point where the trains come together. By the way, and if you remember, in the train station on Main Street at Magic Kingdom, which is more based on a train station in Saratoga, as many of the architectural styles of Main Street there are based on eastern cities in the east. You will see in that train station, Promontory Point, as it's being connected. It's also displayed or showcased in Spaceship Earth. It's an important moment, but hey, that train out of Kansas City head west was what was heading west. Kansas City became a chief railroad junction. And Walt, of course, had a love of trains since his days in Marceline. And if you'll recall, at the age of 15, Walt spent his summer working as a news butcher on the Santa Fe Railroad, selling newspapers, soda, candy, and cigarettes to passengers. The impact of the railroad system on Kansas City was made especially clear to me as I spent time with the Army Corps of Engineers, my client, going up and down the Kansas and Missouri rivers. It is there you find the trains and tracks that still today haul enormous loads of goods from one end of the country to another. In 2019, the rivers flooded, and that gave way to damage done to many of the railway lines. I had a chance to see how the Corps was working to shore up the levee along the rivers in what was, in my view, one of the most impressive and collaborative public sector-led efforts. You know, it's easy to dismiss federal agencies as bureaucratic and difficult to deal with. In truth, there are too many dysfunctional pockets. But what I witnessed here in Kansas City was a well-coordinated and superbly collaborated project that stretched the larger part, I think, about 15 miles. It really was impressive. The lines entering, with all of these lines entering into the city, Kansas City built one of the largest railroad stations in the country, one that covered 15 acres. Grand Union Station, which opened in 1914, just a few years after Walt arrived in Kansas City, offered a system of tracks built below the street level to Union Station at a cost of about $50 million at that time. It allowed Kansas City to become a chief railroad junction for the central mid-states. Union Station was one of the largest railroad stations in the country. Now, I have been, of course, to railway stations in Los Angeles, in New York, in D.C., and so forth. But to see this out in the middle of the Midwest is truly amazing. Moreover, this same station, Grand Union Station, will become home to the Disney 100 exhibition this year, opening on May 24th and through November 30th. There will be more than 250 artifacts and works of art, costumes, props, and memorabilia. They're all going to be showcased in about 10 themed galleries, probably one for every decade, that stretch in time from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs to Cinderella to Encanto and so much more. The Grand Union Station, which opened in 1914 during the time, Walt lived in Kansas City, it was probably the setting where Walt ultimately left for California with a suitcase and a dream. To characterize the difference of going from Kansas City to Los Angeles is, frankly, to compare Main Street USA at Magic Kingdom to Buena Vista Street at Disney California Adventure. It is here Walt entered a whole new world and began a whole new life. Kansas City held some roller coaster years for both Walt and Roy. Amid the amazement of a big town in the middle of nowhere, filled with theaters and entertainment diversions, this young man fought to keep his family alive, even in the coldest days of winter. Perhaps one of my favorite chapters I have ever written was from Disney's Hollywood Studios, From Showbiz to Your Biz. This book is out of print, but ultimately I'll come back to a new writing of it as the studios has changed so much. We will do some things this year because it is the 35th anniversary of Disney's Hollywood Studios. But I did write what was in this chapter called The Final Scene. I did write about Walt's experience, and I hearken back to a scene from Saving Mr. Banks, where Walt Disney sits down with P.L. Travers to understand the emotional scars that are keeping her from allowing the studio to film Mary Poppins. The incident in the film is fictional. Walt never followed Travers back to London from the U.S. But the story he shares is not. For 6 years, starting when he was just 8 years old, Walt worked with his father delivering newspapers morning and night in Kansas City. He carried the papers in a sling over his shoulders with a cart. When one load was delivered, he went home, had dinner, and then went back out to deliver another load. Next morning, he did it again. Kansas City winters were brutal. Let me tell you, they were 18 degrees when I was there. It can be brutal. Despite their hard work, Walt and his brother Roy were never paid, as it was the income for the family, and their father ran the paper route system. Feeling that was unfair, Walt's best friend and closest companion Roy moved on. That only added more to Walt's route and more opportunities for his father to burst out in anger when his son's work was not perfect. Accordingly, late in his life, Walt had a recurring dream in which he suffered torment because he failed in some way to deliver the newspapers along his route. In the film, he shares this memory with Travers and then offers these words. "Now, I don't want to tell you to make you sad, Mrs. Travers. I don't. I love my life. I think it's a miracle. And I love my dad. He was wonderful, a wonderful man. But rare is the day where I don't think of that 8-year-old boy delivering newspapers in the snow. And old Elias Disney with that strap in his fist. And I'm just so tired, Mrs. Travers. I'm tired of remembering it that way. Aren't you tired too, Mrs. Travers. Now, we all have our sad tales, but don't you want to finish the story? Let her all go and have a life that isn't dictated by the past. It's not the children she, Mary Poppins, comes to save. It's their father. It's your father, Travers Goff. That's what it's all about, everything. Forgiveness, Mrs. Travers. It's what I learned from your books. Life is a harsh sentence to lay down for yourself. Give her to me, Mrs. Travers. Trust me with your precious Mary Poppins. I won't disappoint you. I swear every time a person walks into a movie house, they will see George Banks being saved. They will love him as kids. They will weep for his cares. They will wring their hands when he loses his job. And when he flies that kite, oh, Mrs. Travers, they will rejoice. They will sing. George Banks will be honored. George Banks will be redeemed. George Banks and all he stands for will be saved. Maybe not in real life, but in imagination. Because that's what us storytellers do. We restore order with imagination. We still hope again and again. Well, despite the functionality that he and his family experienced, Walt Disney became the leader and the voice of family entertainment. That would require him learning difficult lessons that resulted in bankruptcy, but it ultimately led him to California and a new life. Of Disneyland, he would comment how badly he wanted a place where children and parents could enjoy time together. Millions of families come together because of the entertainment Walt Disney and his legacy has produced. And he, along with his brother, did their best to honor and support the parents until the day they died. Importantly, they were good sons. It is also here in 1923, Walt would learn difficult lessons. But it ultimately led him to Hollywood at the advice of his brother Roy, who had also returned to Kansas City after the war, to the bank, and to court Edna. At one point, needing tonsils removed, he went to a doctor during his lunch break, hemorrhaged from the surgery, and ended up in a hospital where he found out that he had tuberculosis. That led to being quarantined in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and then moved to Tucson, Arizona, and ultimately to Los Angeles, California. Walt hops on the train and heads to join his brother in Los Angeles. There, the two will establish the Disney Brothers Studios when he lands a new contract for the Alice comedies. And the rest is history. Another 100 years of it. As in so many of my podcasts, I love to leave free souvenirs for you and your organization. So ask yourself the following. What are the circumstances that have brought you to this moment? How do those circumstances define or potentially direct change in your life? How do you let current circumstances define your experience? What are the positive opportunities in those circumstances? How could those circumstances provide new windows of opportunity you have not considered before? Who is there to support you under any circumstance? Who can you support in any circumstance? And then, finally, I would ask, as in the story, how can you instill hope again and again, no matter the circumstance? Well, this is actually the chapter that then leads into something called A Century of Powerful Disney Insights. If you're going to go out to the 100 Years exhibition, or if you don't have the opportunity to do so, either way, you may want to prepare or you may want to substitute with the new book I've written, which is A Century of Powerful Insights on Amazon. It's a great way to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney Company, because in over 100 years, this organization has emerged to become one of the most successful entertainment entities across the globe. In this, the first of two volumes, we study the first 50 years of Disney, beginning with Walt and Roy. We look at major milestones and not only see the evolution of an organization begun in a garage in California, but how it ultimately became so beloved to millions around the world, from Oswald the Lucky Rabbit and Mickey Mouse through Snow White and Cinderella, from the Mouseketeers to Mary Poppins, and from Disneyland to Walt Disney World. We share stories and insights from 1923, just after they leave Kansas City, to 1973. We hope you'll be inspired by ideas and how you can apply these concepts to your own life and work. And if you want to do something even bigger, if you want to create excellence in your organization, may I remind you that this podcast is sponsored by Performance Journeys, celebrating over 20 years as a training and development group, bringing best in business ideas through books, keynotes, workshops, seminars, online tools, so many different ways to help you take your organization to the next level. So if you are having a function in your school, in your work, in your business, whatever it may be, a convention, conference, you need a keynote speaker, let me tell you, I not only bring some wonderful stories that inspire, I also tie them to proven insights and solutions that I have experienced working with organizations in the trench, organizations that have had to build the levee, so to speak. Do you need consulting? Well, I've done that. Since my days at the Disney Institute, I have worked with public, private, and nonprofit organizations to help them improve their organization. If you need support, I have classroom online and other resources to help you improve. Whether you're looking at improving leadership, customer service, your employees, are they engaged? We can talk about team dynamics. We can talk about all of that. Just give me a call today and let's talk about how to take your organization to the next level. Well, that does it for this Disney Insights podcast. Thanks for joining us. We are coming up on a major, major milestone. So grateful that you've been listening to us. Keep listening, subscribe, share with others. And as we talk about in all of our podcasts, always follow the compass of your heart. You never know where the train may lead you. Have a great day. We'll see you real soon.